Thank you, Tom. From one of the smallest states to the largest state, or one of the largest states. Appreciate you sticking around for this afternoon. Title of my presentation is Use of Electromagnetic Inductance for Verification of Soil Variability. And this is a cooperative project between the Soil Survey Office in Lubbock and Texas Tech University. I think most of you know what EMI is, but it's provide for a rapid assessment of the apparent electrical conductivity, which can be used to help identify soil variability. It can be used to predict soil characteristics without soil disruption. And soils within the purpose of this was the soils within the sand hill areas of West Texas and New Mexico form a soil complex, very difficult to map. They are not easily delineated, and that was the purpose, to see if we could use EMI to help delineate a complex landscape geomorphic surface in the sandhills of Texas. So the was to compare the USDA NRCS soil transect data with EMI data, see if the EMI data could be used to verify the variability, and if ECA could be used to separate soil series within the complex. Location, it was in Cochran County, Texas. I'll show you a map in a second. Texas Tech has a Thulum 2 meter long, 50 meter spaced transects using a soil auger to verify the soils after we did the EMI. So the study area is in Cochran County. This is Lubbock, where Texas Tech is. This is a Texas-New Mexico state line. And from about Morton down to this area here, this is the Sandhill area, and it extends all the way across over to Plainview. So quite an extensive area of sandhills in West Texas and eastern New Mexico. So this is what the area looks like. We're standing down here in an inner dune site. Vegetation, the difference in elevation here is about 10 meters. So what we wanted to know is can we use EMI to look at different soils and identify the variability across this landscape. So this is the Thulum 2. We pulled behind Honda, and what we use here, this is those of you that might be deer hunters, this is a deer sled, and we just adopted the deer sled to put the Thulum on. We strap it down and pull it across at whatever side, and it actually pulls very well through this Shinry oak. This is another some of the other landscapes associated with it. You see the dune here, a blowout. And what is the differences between soils here and the soils within the blowout area. Sometimes it's kind of tricky to pull this thing up and over the hills. As long as you have it in four-wheel drive, most of the time it doesn't turn over backwards with you, as long as you go straight up the hill at about a 45-degree slope or something like that. So these are some of the results. Just show you a couple of transects. This was the EMI transects. You'll notice the EM data, ECA data, ranges from about a little less than 23 for this green to this high here of 30.48. In using this kind of data, it doesn't particularly matter what the soil moisture content is, because we're not looking at ECA directly. What we're using is the differences in sand content or clay content. So we're really mapping either sand or clay content and separating soils based on that. Once we'd run the transect, then these X points are associated where there was a different color or differences in ECA. And you can see the reddish areas here are the sand or the dunes. You'll notice a very linear dune across this area here, and then with inner dunes. And so we Once we'd run the ECA, we used a soil auger to identify these, and these are the soils. And you'll notice in fairly close proximity here, a new Tivoli, Circleback, Plains, a Yokran, new Tivoli. And in a minute, I will show you the classification of those because I'm quite aware that you don't know the soil series associated with this. But just to show you the complexity of the soils associated across this transect, from this point to this point is about 1 kilometer. So the classification of the series, Circleback fine sand is a mixed thermic active lamellic paleostaph. Paleostaph. That's the current classification we would propose based on classification and data to call it a mixed thermic active aridic lamellic haplostaph, where we would add the aridic in there because of the dryness and certainly where we're at. The new Tivoli sand currently is classified as a mixed thermic aridic dusty sandment, and the only we would not really change the classification of the new Tivoli series. The Plain series is defined as a loamy siliceous active thermic gross aridic paleostaph. We would propose a loamy siliceous active thermic gross aridic haplostaph because the soil profile is thin. This does not occur in soils taxonomy. All of the gross aridic groups or great groups are automatically put in paleostaphs, and we think that that's not a good thing, especially whenever you have a really thin argillic horizon. The idea maybe being that because it's gross aridic, that is, it is pale, but in these sand dune areas, you can have 180 to 190 centimeters of sand, and you'll see in one of these that some of the sand may be fairly recent, that it's not pedogenic, it's not due to pedogenesis, and we think it ought to be separated away from that. In the Yokran fine sand would be a loamy siliceous active thermic aridic haplostaph, and we would propose no change for that. So we're going to show you a series of profile, so you'll see what some of these soils look like. This is the new Tivoli. It's actually sampled in New Mexico, but only about a mile or two into New Mexico. This is the landscape. Very typically, the new Tivoli is the dune soil. Almost always covered with shinry oak. This is the landscape. This is the soil, the new Tivoli. And we're down here, again, this is an Inta soil. We're down to, this is a little over 2 meters. The bottom of this actually went to about 3 meters of sand. So this is very typical of the sand dune. This is, again, in the background, these sand dunes would be the new Tivoli series. The Plains fine sand, let me back up one if I can. This, looking into this area here, just below the sand dunes, this would be the landscape of the Plains series. Notice this was gross arenic, and down here at about 190 centimeters, this is where the argillic horizon comes in. We will concentrate. You can see a little bit differences here, and we look at that a little bit closer. This upper 60 centimeters is probably historic. Means that this upper 60 centimeters was probably deposited between 1950 and 1965. But this is the one that we would propose as a HAP rather than a paley. A little bit closer to the dune is the Yokran. And then now, as you can see, as we get a little bit thinner sand, this is just arenic. So you have a very thick A horizon, an E horizon over a argillic horizon. So very well defined. And one of the things associated with this, because this is at the foot of the dunes, it's very common that they have redoxomorphic features associated with those. As the sand water runs into this, it runs downhill and it collects on top of this argillic horizon, and you'll notice You'll notice these things with this area here, redox morphic features. Some of these are contemporaneous and some of them are certainly relic. So in conclusion, EMI has proved to be a useful technology to assess soil spatial variability, and gross rooting capital steps need to be added to soil taxonomy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Any questions at all?
If you come out in the summertime before these pictures were taken, we let him go, but there was about an 8.5-foot rattlesnake about that big around, and we told him bye-bye, and we left him alone. They're very important in these areas not to kill the rattlesnakes because of eating mice and rats and other things like that. It's very important from the ecology standpoint to let them. Yes?
Wait, what are these soils used for? They look pretty barren.
Mostly wildlife. Because of the Shinry oak, these are excellent mule deer habitat. They also support blue and bobwhite quail. In some of the flats, there is enough grass in years like we had this last year that they do graze those areas. You know, one cow for about every 60 acres. But they are used for livestock. I didn't show, I thought I had a picture in one of these landscapes. No, I think I left it out. I'm sorry. The other major use are grasshoppers. The ones that are the grasshoppers, these metal ones that go up and down like this. And they pump this black fluid out of the ground. That's the major use of this area. Yes.
You're proposing a new taxonomic classification based on morphological heterogeneity. But would you say that these soils vary in their function? Are there properties any different, or is it strictly a morphological difference?
Now, there's also a function use. What we see in these in the haps, they don't have nearly as much Shinry oak as the paleys, so there is a vegetation difference on many of these. And also because of the organic matter in there, there's probably a slight difference in maybe water or nutrient holding capacity. Part of it, I guess, also stems from what we know about land use. Many of these dunes are active. They have probably changed in the last 20 years. We've been unseasonably wet for the last 10 years or so. 15 years ago, most of this area was active dune. In the last 10 years, because of rainfall, Shinry oak is very prolific, and it has covered these, except in a few of the blowout areas.
Is fire a problem in that area?
Natural fire is, especially in some of the areas associated with this. There's a CRP, and during the spring of the year, March, especially March, when we have those 70 and 80 mile an hour winds, humidity down to zero, because of the sand that moves, it's not uncommon to start a wildfire. And fire is a major problem in these areas. Ecologically, it's probably good because it actually helps burn the scrub oak or the Shinry oak back, and whenever it comes back, and it's really favorable for wildlife especially here. This area was the major prairie chicken habitat of West Texas and New Mexico.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
One comment I'd like to make, and that is the second half of this session, it consists of 13 posters, I believe, that are going to be on display in the poster hall, and I think the authors will be present from 4 to 6 this afternoon. So encourage everybody to go down and take a look at those as well.
Thank you very much, Paul. Let's. We didn't have any time for questions for Mark. Were there any questions at all for Mark Stolte about the subaqueous soils?
Mark, you showed the one map of the pond, and you had the different map units.
Yeah.
How deep is that pond? Deepest part?
I was pretty shallow. Probably the deepest part might be 4 or 5 meters or something like that. And some of our ponds are shallow. Some of the other ones we're working in, they may be, like 7 or 8 meters in some cases. We won't spend much time mapping something that's like that's more than like 5 meters. It's just difficult. But with the GPR, I think you can get a pretty good idea what's there.